Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel live from the Linda on Central Avenue in Albany, New York. And this is where we tell you that we are before a live studio audience today. And to tell you that, they're all going to cheer wildly. This is Leadership Tech Valley, a wonderful group from both the Schenectady and Albany Colony Chambers who get together, and these are our current and future leaders of this region who are doing wonderful, wonderful work, and this is the media part of their training, and they come in, and they have a full day of events planned here at the Linda, and we are just but a small part, an accoutrement. And we are here, and it is a delight to be before such a wonderful group. And you'll hear from them. Hopefully, they'll chuckle and they'll guffaw and laugh and cry and all kinds of things. And we'll hear that on the radio, and that's why they're here. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get to what we're supposed to do on the radio, which is talk about the topics of the day. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan Chartok. Big hand for Alan Chartok. Morning.
Good morning, Big Joe. You know I've always looked up to you.
I know. It's very nice. It was very nice to have you here and to hear your remarks earlier. I'd never heard those stories before. So it's nice to hear them. Rex Smith is here, the editor of the Times Union. Oh, my God, we got Rex Smith here.
Wow.
His first time on the panel.
Cool.
We're very excited. I actually don't know that that's true. I think when you had your new press, I think it was the second time.
This is my second time.
So thank you for coming back and having it take you 2 years. I appreciate
Great
that.
Great to be here. Thanks.
And last but certainly not least, and I left her till the end because I'm just so excited, about 3 or 4 months ago, Rosemary said, in the dark of night, sent me a carrier pigeon and said, I'm going to be away. And she went somewhere. We don't know where the hell she went, but she went somewhere. And
we don't know who sent her there.
We don't know where she went. We do know that listeners, day after day after day, would say, "Where in the world is Rosemary?" And we would just write back 2 question marks because we really don't know.
No. I was in Iceland and Tunisia, and the CIA did not send me, Alan.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, University at Albany journalism professor, investigative reporter, world traveler, Rosemary Armeo is back today just for you.
Thank you.
She took a special flight from Detroit just so she could do this very event. So
I'm seriously jet-lagged. If I fall over, my head conks against it. It's nothing against you or the program.
And during the breaks, if you want to get into a really heated conversation with Rosemary, just say, "Hey, how was your flight?"
Oh, I have new anecdotes.
Let's talk about the news of the day and the story out of Belgium. Belgian counterterrorism police conducted raids across their nation Thursday, killing 2 suspected Islamist militants and disrupting an alleged plot to launch an attack that would have been the 2nd instance of homegrown Islamist violence in Europe in just 8 days, according to officials. This story from the Washington Post. The dramatic police strikes coincided with heightened alerts across Europe in the wake of the deadly attacks in Paris last week by men claiming to have ties to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. Rosemary, you have not been with us for the past week and a half as we have discussed this, so not only will I let you start and take the lead on this particular story, and just to get your thoughts overall on what is happening in that part of the world.
I just came back from Tunisia, and I found that everywhere I went, a waiter giving me a cup of mint tea, a woman with a glove on scraping the skin off my body in a hammam, every place we went, people would say, you know, you're American. Oh, we're not all terrorists. And I think that you need to know, we all need to know that they are as upset and nervous about this, they being normal, regular, everyday, non-extremist, moderate is Muslims. They're not all terrorists. And they are, in Tunisia, as upset as we are here and as Belgium is by seemingly well-placed and happy young men going off to fight in Syria. They do not understand what's going on. So the point I would like to make is I don't think it's homegrown at all. I think this is coming out of Saudi Arabia. this kind of extremist. We need a caliphate. We need to crush the West stuff is part of the philosophy of Saudi Arabia. And this country refuses to address the real source of terrorism. Saudis were behind what happened at 9/11, and they continue to be the people rousing up unrest and discontent in the Muslim world. It's baloney to think that these are only young men who have no hope, no dreams, and so they go off to fight. It's simply not proved by the evidence. So I'd like to see us begin to look at Saudi Arabia as the source of this.
You know, Rex, you've always had your ear to the ground in terms of local what local folks are thinking. Rosemary hints at the prejudice that we see coming towards all Muslims. Do you have any sense of that in the capital region?
Yes, I have a sense that it is real. In fact, we're doing some reporting to try to do a good report on that in the Times Union in the next couple of weeks. An Islamic woman, a Muslim woman, sits right outside my office, is one of the real treasures of our newsroom, and I've spent time visiting her place of worship, which is the Islamic Center of the Capital Region. And I think that the fact of the matter is that, as Rosemary says, this is a small group, of course, of the vast Muslim community worldwide, 1.7 billion people. And it is a direct offshoot of the Wahhabist strain of Islam, which took root in the House of Saud in the 19th century. You know, it's as though... Consider it this way. Think of if the Westboro Baptist Church suddenly drew the protection of the Kansas National Guard and the governor of Kansas and rose up to take control of Middle America and those despicable folks of Westboro Baptist with their radical brand of Christianity tried to impose their will and then became violent with it. That would be a similar thing to what has happened in Saudi Arabia. And I think you're exactly right, Rosemary, that we need to address this politically, because you can't get at it with purely police actions on these individual levels.
We are in the middle of a police action against ISIS, and we should be in Nigeria. Boko Haram is doing horrible stuff. It's another ISIS. And if we went in there, I have no illusion that I wouldn't be calling for us to go someplace else. It has to come from within the Islamic community. But the people who run all the schools, who are teaching kids this, and children in Tunisia are learning the same thing as the children in Belgium and all the other places where they're rising up and heading off to Syria, is this craziness. It has to stop, and it has to be from within the community.
And of course, I guess the big question for us is, and we've seen it before in America, when we react to the Japanese invasion and we punish the Japanese people in a way which we now recognize as despicable, what will happen to American civil liberties as a result of having to offer this protection against some of these thugs? So we've seen it with McCarthyism, we've seen it a lot. What do we do in order to keep straight and keep balanced?
Yeah, we're seeing it already, that we should restrict our freedom of speech in order not to offend people, because look what it does. It causes unrest in the world. The Pope today has called on us to respect other religions. And no. This is what keeps us free. This is exactly what we're protecting. And we should not be giving it up. We should be arguing our own point of view, which is the real argument against the discussions and the points made by the Wahhabists. Our way of life, our political system, is exactly our best weapon, and we're not doing a good job putting it forward.
That said, it is true that these young people are being recruited to go from these European countries. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, Belgium has the highest percentage of people who've gone off to Syria. Yeah. And that seems likely to be, or has it been shown to be, the path that was taken by these who were mm-hmm. attacked yesterday.
And we see the incredible reaction. I mean, France could go totally right wing. I mean, you know, you have Le Pen and basically fascism rearing its head.
Yeah. And the U.S. government, through all these years, has supported the House of Saud. It's a corrupt and deeply corrupt and just a horrible regime. The people there do not support it. They're oppressed, and we're the supporters of it. Of course we're the enemy.
And 1,000 lashes to this guy who blogged. A Saudi blogger, 1,000 lashes. He's getting, what, 50 a 50 week?
50 every Friday. The second 50 is today.
I and believe they, I've just heard that that's been delayed because of his medical condition. Which
was the 50 lashes of last week. Imagine this. They take this young man. He's got three kids. He's in his 30s, early 30s. And they take him from a prison, put him on a bus, drive him to a public square, public place in Saudi. They leave his face open but pin his hands and his feet together. And a man walks up behind him without warning, and between 5 and 15 minutes, the accounts varied, lash him with a cane. It's not a whip, it's a cane, 50 times. And then they put him back on the bus and take him back to the prison. He has 1 week before he comes back for the next one. So I'm not, he's going to die. This is a death sentence, but it's death by torture. That's the government we support in the United States.
To say nothing of the women in this room today, and there are a lot of them here, who would not be allowed to drive a car in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Now, understand the political impediments to a foreign policy that would target an attempt to do something about this. And those are the business affiliations between major American industries, notably the oil industry, and those government assets, let's say, in Saudi Arabia. It is very difficult if you're trying to please those in pursuit of the profit goal of oil companies to say, we're going to go after your partners in Saudi Arabia. That would have a direct influence on these American industries as well. So that has an influence that reaches into presidential politics. That reaches into what's going to happen in the Texas economy if the oil industry is damaged. There are interweaving strains there that are really difficult to negotiate politically.
I have definitely oversimplified it. Oil and business is huge. It's huge to our economy, and we need to pay attention to that. But make no mistake, there are three countries right now where our foreign policy has put us in the shape in the world we're seeing. One is Saudi Arabia because of these business arrangements. One is Israel, and that's not business, but deeply personal, deeply an old historical tie. That hurts us. And Pakistan is the other one. We're treating them like a friend. They are not a friend. And those three places have caused the mix, or have gone a long way to explaining the mix of troubles that we're seeing with Muslims and Christians.
We have to take a quick break, and we will be right back and continue the conversation. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Brickshire String Instruments School of Lutery, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts. Working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles, BrickshireStringInstruments.com for class registration. Lucky Chocolates, Saugerties, New York. Specializing in gluten-free and organic handmade treats, chocolates, and platters, LuckyChocolates.com. And Saratoga Bridges, Ballston Spa, New York. A community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more, saratogabridges.org.
National relationships that we're not aware of.
I think they're acting in the long-term best interest, because by refusing to cut production, that keeps the price of oil low, and that continues Americans' reliance on oil.
Yes.
That is, Americans have made this immediate switch. We've had these stories in the Times Union showing that people are now once again buying gas guzzlers, pickup trucks are flying off the showroom floors in the capital region. This is a direct result of oil prices being low, which Saudi Arabia is maintaining by not cutting production as they used to do when oil prices were
up. And Rex, they're putting it to the Russians. I always want to say the Soviet Union, but it's almost the same. Putting it to the Russians, which really make the sanctions work. The fact that they can't sell that oil because it isn't in the self-interest of the Saudis to do it, but somehow somebody's convinced them that this is the best anti-Putin weapon we have going.
So there's the plus, and the minus is Boko Haram, ISIS, children in countries throughout the world racing to Syria right now, which is a sinkhole. Yeah. There you go.
I do want to talk about Boko Haram when we come back. We're going to take a break. We're going to get some news from the BBC, and then we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rex Smith, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our live roundtable panel on this Friday morning. We are at the Linda, which is a wonderful performing arts venue on Central Avenue in downtown Albany, New York, right across from the WAMC studios. And we are at the corner of Quail and Central. And the reason we are here broadcasting is because there's this wonderful group of men and women who have gotten together called Leadership Tech Valley. They come in and over, it's almost like semester. Like, how many months do you do this?
9 months.
So it's almost like a school year.
It's also almost like having a baby.
That's right. That's right. So you would be in your what trimester?
Second.
Second, I believe. So then they come in and are learning about all kinds of things about the region, business, law, all kinds of subjects that are discovered. And this is the media portion, and we are doing it here at the Linda, and it's a great pleasure to be a part of their proceedings. So we have our live panel with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Mayo, and Rex Smith, and of course we welcome your comments at home, roundtable at wamc.org, and I'll just give you a hint for those of you listening at home. You have a computer and can write to us. The people out in the audience, although not very far from us, don't have a microphone, so we won't be hearing from them, but we will be hearing from you. So,
but they probably have handheld devices.
Right, and they'll send it in. Wouldn't that be great if we got one that said, hi, Bob from the audience?
Right.
Right, that's great.
Cool.
So let us go. Do we have a letter or two there, Alan?
Well, I see a letter. It says, dear folks, Rosemary is so right.
Oh, repeat that, please.
Rosemary
is we missed that, Rosemary?
So right. Wahhabi is the religious equivalent of Ebola. That's from Bonnie.
The religious equivalent of Ebola. That's
interesting. Spreading. It's spreading, and it's toxic, and yeah, not a bad metaphor.
Mm-hmm. So that's what we got.
All right. We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. There are other issues that I want to discuss, or the things that we want to bring up on the program this morning, and one of them is what Rosemary was talking about right before we went to the break, and that is Boko Haram, and the satellite images show the ruin that has been left by that group. Thousands of buildings were burned, damaged, and destroyed in northern Nigerian towns in recent days when Boko Haram militants stormed through using scorched earth tactics against civilians, according to a new analysis of satellite images by human rights groups. The images that I've seen have been basically taken 5 days apart, one on January 2nd, one on January 7th. It's horrifying, and it's just striking of the differences. And there is some, I have to say, both in the New York Times and the Washington Post, some wonderful visuals that are available online to be able to kind of put this into some context and perspective. Rosemary?
Because I was overseas, so I do the foreign one first. This is a fascinating story to journalists, and it is not ignited in the public, and I struggle to figure out why. We know so little. We don't know who are these people. You know, Boko Haram, the name means something like, you know, education is bad.
But Western education, I believe.
Yeah, Western education is bad. Who are these people? The newspapers are using words like militant to describe them, which, of course, doesn't mean anything. If you have weapons, you're a militant, but what do you stand for? We don't know. And I think this is something that all war correspondents and struggle with. They try to make something horrible happening in a faraway place relevant to us, so we'll do something. The West will do something. And yet, how do you imagine this? Militants, unknown people, sweep in, wreck a town, knock down hundreds of buildings, steal all the girls, enslave them, turn the boys into soldiers. Can you imagine if that happened in Vermont? If something like that happened in a town in Minnesota, what would be our reaction? And yet, because it's so far away, I've been many places in Africa. I've never been to Nigeria. It doesn't seem relevant even to me, and I'm more traveled, I know, than many of my students who I'm trying to get interested in this. So it's a dreadful story, and it's the same story as ISIS. That the other interesting thing is that the government in Nigeria, which you would think would be a little more involved in it than we are, seems completely unaware. There's an election going on, and the candidate, the incumbent who is running again, barely speaks about this. this. It's like, we forget that little corner of Nigeria. I'm horrified by this story. If I could go anywhere in the world to report on something, this is the one I would like to go find out more about.
Ooh, that would be dangerous.
It would be.
I think that's
Westerner educated in a girl. Ooh.
Yeah. Our Rosemary has never been afraid to go anywhere, and what she does is to go around the, for those who don't know, is to go around the world and train reporters on how to do this stuff.
Yeah, they make it sound like a big deal, but really what you're doing is working with the people who are really taking the risk, Alan. They're the ones who go out and face people who would hurt them.
It's very dangerous.
It's quite amazing when you consider that these insurgents, as they're sometimes called, these terrorists, employ such tactics that I don't understand how ultimately they can prevail in terms of building an affiliation with the public. This is the outfit, you remember, that over the weekend used a little girl, perhaps 10 years old, with a bomb strapped to her that she may not even have been aware of, to blow up a marketplace in Nigeria, apparently detonated by somebody at a remote location when she was about to be searched by a metal detector. This is so beyond the sense of what civilization can tolerate that you wonder what their end game is, or if they even have a strategy behind it.
Well, I think there is a strategy. I think the Nazis had the same strategy. And the strategy is to go so far beyond the pole that nobody will dare mess with them. That is what it seems to me. Rosemary made the point that ISIS does the same thing. They cut people's heads off in front of the world community. This is something that's so abhorrent to all of us that it's a way of organizing your power.
Yeah, it's interesting. We, the West, we are the audience for both sides. The terrorists are doing things so shocking that they want to get our attention, and they're ramping that up. Beheadings are bad, but wow, kidnap little girls and strap bombs to them. That's even worse. What comes next? That's a frightening thought. And also the other side, the Nigerian citizens, the Tunisians who are trying to build a government, they're looking to help for the United States too. Help us. We're going to do it right. And when West and U.S. are so connected that it's hard to differentiate. And yet we have this tremendous lack of interest in it all. And Syria is a good example. I don't think we should be involved in Syria. We shouldn't get involved. What are the sides? What's in it for us? So all of this is being played for a West that is incredibly disinterested, except when it strikes in the middle of Paris.
One of the things that we love to do is read the mail here. Quite frequently, people put words into others' mouths that they didn't say. So here's a good example. Rosemary doesn't agree with Pope Francis that we should have respect for other beliefs and religions in the press? That's not right. We need to have respect for all religions. I think she'd be whistling a different tune if the disrespect was aimed at the Christians or Jews. Well, we're here. We were all on the panel. The audience was here. And at no point did Rosemary ever say or imply that she didn't have respect for other religions.
I could trace this to the denigration of debate in Washington. This is the way the conversations go between the Congress and the White House. Misrepresentation is really the currency of political debate these days. And so maybe we're just all taking cues from that.
I do disagree with the Pope, though.
The thing about Rosemary is she is totally unafraid.
On this issue or just
well,
in general?
Well, the Pope today, I mean, I think he's fabulous. He said a lot of the right things. But today he said, no, you know, those you had to expect a reaction. If you knock somebody's religion, they're going to come back at you, and so we shouldn't knock any religion. Well, if we follow that here in the United States, all those stories about priests molesting little children, that kind of was offensive, so we don't cover it. So, yeah, I disagree with the Pope. I think sometimes you do have to offend other religions.
I am going to change the subject because I feel like I want to do that.
Because I'm going on a rant. I'll be good. I'll be good.
I feel that I really, really want to do that. But I do. I want to go back to you, Rosemary, because of something you said earlier that I think we should address. And that is why you think, because you say you do not know why this particular story of Boko Haram has not ignited more coverage, has not been more a centerpiece in our daily world news coverage. And I'm interested, especially with your perspective of other spots in the globe, of why that is.
Because we used to call it, we in the West used to call it the dark continent. That had nothing to do with blackness and Caucasians. It had to do with mystery. It was an empty blank spot on most maps, and Africa remains that way for us. We have very few economic ties with them. The Chinese have more ties with Africa than we do. We don't have very many personal ties there. Many of our relatives, even in the African American community, do not come from Nigeria. They come from Ghana and the West Coast. And we don't travel there. As I said, I've been many times to Africa. I've never been to Nigeria. It's a hard place to travel in. So there's no connections. And then the story itself is just so unimaginable. We're going to go in and sweep up a school worth of children and enslave them. That's really hard to imagine. It's like science fiction. So I just think there's a disconnect between the place and the story and people.
Don't you think there's a possibility that Goodluck Jonathan and the other leaders just don't think they can win there, so therefore they're going to ignore it, because it's just too much for them to do. And they may also be worried that if they do commit forces and they lose, then the whole thing takes off.
I mean, we're talking internal Nigerian politics, and that's totally it. What African administrations care about is power, staying in power, and they take money from the government and enrich their own people, usually their own tribe, definitely their own family and their own tribes. And that's totally what he wants. If he were to fight against that army, he might lose. It's exactly the same, if we want to go into African history, into Uganda, which fought a 30-year war in the north against Joseph Kony. Remember, he suddenly popped into our consciousness a few years ago. But that was a 30-year war in which he did the same thing, turned young children into slaves and soldiers.
Well, so Rex and Rosemary, Sam wants to know, what should America's involvement be in Nigeria?
I wouldn't presume to know enough to offer advice to the president on that. The problem is that it's a small cell. Boko Haram has been estimated to be perhaps only a couple thousand fighters. It does seem to me that we can offer aid to those who are fighting Boko Haram, but the difficulty, as we've seen in the reluctance to engage in Syria, is that you have to be careful who you aid. You have to be careful who you give weapons and support to, because they may not be your friends tomorrow. It's very difficult. And I just simply don't know enough to be able to offer advice to the U.S. government on what to do about that.
I don't know much more, but my advice would be force the presidency. Good luck, Joseph, whatever his name is.
Good luck, Jonathan.
Good luck. Yeah, I can never remember. That's such a strange name. Force him to do something about it, that this is unacceptable to the international community. There is discussion within Africa to put together a force on the ground to go after them. We ought to be supporting that, as there is against ISIS, by the way, which we ought to be supporting. Those are two. We ought to be looking at all of these. Rex is right. This is a cell, and Boko Haram and IS or ISIS, whatever they're calling themselves these days.
Whatever we're calling them.
I'm assuming that the government already has some sort of study into place. We need a reaction all the time to these things, not just to every once in a while like a crisis mode.
Well, you know, I don't like to agree with Rex about much, but I think his point is profound about, and we said this right from the very beginning, as we supported the anti-Syrian, anti-Assad people, which was, who do we know who we're getting into bed with here? Because we have seen again and again, including Osama bin Laden, that we've made those kinds of mistakes. So I think that's right. But Rosemary, if you're to be listened to here, and you should be, and we decide we're going in on any level, then what happens if it turns out we're wrong? And even if we support an international force which supports the bad guys.
The international force that supports the... No, I want to support the international force that stops a group that enslaves children and turns them into human bombs. That's enough. I don't think I need, or Americans need, much more than that. That's doing good.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and continue our conversation as we finish up our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new. 845-901-6129. Utica College, offering a Master of Science degree in Healthcare Administration online, utica.edu. And the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care, cecaa.com.
We'll assume we're on the air. Good morning. Oh,
you see, now the light went on, so
well,
we're on the air.
The music is back, and that's great. Okay, welcome back to the Roundtable program and our panel discussion this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo is back. And how long do we have you before you go again?
I'll get back to you on that.
All right, great. And have your people give us the dates, will you? And Rex Smith is with us as well. We were talking during the break about how it's been a very heavy show. These poor people have come in. They're gnawing on their muffins and and I mean food. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, you know, and Rosemary said, oh, my God, this is such a heavy show. We should lighten it up. Alan made this suggestion.
Yes, we should talk about Mrs. Clooney's wearing the white gloves on the runway. You know,
at
the Golden Globes. This is all the rage. Everybody's talking about it.
So I said I was surprised that the New York Times had spent as much time writing about it. And then Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, turns and says, yes, well, I'm interested in this because I believe I'm writing a column about this.
Well, you know, I've laid out the columnist corollary in my column of last week, which is that if you give someone a column, everything they see looks like a column topic to them. You're constantly on the look for something, as Alan knows, because he writes, you write two different columns a week, right? For two different sets of publications, and sometimes three. I believe sometimes you write one for the WAMC newsletter as well. So, but my interest was that last night, as I was reviewing some of the digital material about Boko Haram, which we were just discussing, right below it was on the New York Times site was this story about the white gloves, good heavens, worn to the Golden Globes by George Clooney's brilliant wife. And I was struck by the juxtaposition, by the fact that Americans would be paying attention to the white gloves, that this would be a topic that would warrant so much conversation. So I think it might be worth just thinking about that a little bit, about what it is that gets our attention and why we are so willing to devote our attention to white gloves with a black dress. Oh my goodness. And apparently somewhat oversized white gloves.
Yes.
I'm led
yes,
to believe.
Yes, we're talking about them not fitting properly.
Oh.
But it seems to me that if
horrifying.
Someone could get gloves that fit, it would be her, and that's probably what she wanted, right?
I think so, and it may well be that this is a new style statement, that maybe we're all going to start wearing ill-fitting white gloves, and it'll be considered cool.
Well, you wear black a lot, Alan. That would be great for you.
Ah. But I'm relieved. I am really relieved. I'm so relieved, because I thought that... I had the feeling that every column that Rex writes is based on something he heard on WAMC.
And now it confirms that suspicion.
And guess what? We also heard from somebody, Sean, in the audience here.
Oh, we did. We did get it.
There
he is.
Sean.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were just bored and checking your messages.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Sean from the audience says, our policy has been to arm others at what seems to be the expense of arming the next regime. A coalition of forces needs to take this head on. Thanks for asking, Rosemary, to weigh in on what seems like, what is seemingly overlooked. And that's from Sean, who is both an MPA and an AICP. Now, I know what an MPA is, but AICP, that's a little above my time here. Yeah, whatever.
Anybody want to comment?
On further? Sean or on gloves?
to Sean's comment.
We're with him.
Yeah,
we agree.
Very with him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
Can we talk about the gloves again?
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
Well, Rosemary didn't weigh in on the gloves.
I'm in favor of gloves, particularly in this weather, whether
have,
they
you
fit or not.
You have gloves with you right in front of you.
Yeah, I do. But and they don't fit either. They're oversized black ones with a black outfit. What do you think?
Good.
Very cool. Very nice, yes.
And Alan's basically in favor of George Clooney's wife, so we know where he comes down on this.
Yeah, Taylor Swift and George Clooney's wife. Those are my people.
And for those of us who work with Alan, those two post-Weaver references are wonderful. That's really good.
Everybody in the audience is looking at you, Joe, and saying, what the hell is the Weavers?
Yeah, we're the Weavers, right. Exactly my point, ladies and gentlemen. So we are, did you miss that kind of, like how much of that kind of news do you get when you're in Tunisia?
This idea that you go, my mother has this, you're in Tunisia, I'll never hear from you. No, they have phones. They have great,
do
in
they
fact,
have
they're
coverage
better wired
Mrs.
than
Mrs. Clooney's
we
gloves?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And do you, and do you get, do you have the WAMC app on your phone?
I do, and okay. I listen to it overseas. Oh, like every day, yeah.
Every day, right.
We can't see that wink on the radio, you know. She winked right into the microphone as she said that.
I'm wondering, I know we didn't like actually plan to do this, but I'm wondering if the audience has any questions about the topics that we've talked about, that they could say it loudly, we'll repeat them, and then people could answer them, because we have like 5 minutes.
Or other important There's questions one right like there. Gloves.
You got
right,
one over
yes,
here.
Yes, we got one right here. Go ahead.
And loud as you can possibly do it.
Yeah.
Scream.
He was just wondering where the UN is.
Why is the UN not more involved?
Yeah.
Well, the UN, you know, speaking of politics, the UN is basically hamstrung in most of its efforts by the structure that's set up with the Security Council making the crux of all decisions. And I would again suggest that there are commercial relationships among the various nations that preclude direct action. Also, the UN, for good reason, operates rather glacially. You do want to have full debate so that it doesn't respond too swiftly. We, by the way, are frequently not in the majority stance when the United Nations moves forward, so it would not be to the U.S.'s interests domestically if the U.N. were to respond real quickly on a lot of stuff.
And also, Rex, quite frequently the U.N. will send forces in, and then there will be hell to pay.
UN forces being yeah. primarily frequently U.S. people operating under the
and
UN.
And somebody
flag.
Will start to shoot them.
Yeah.
And they get out.
The classic case there was Rwanda, where the UN did act but didn't fund. And that means the U.S. did not fund. And so you sent in a bunch of forces who did little to stop massacre there in 1994. And that there's been little change since then. It's a very it could be a good operation, but it is not. It's not funded properly.
Somebody identifying herself, I think, as Bubby, said, "Please ask Rosemary to explain her comment on Israel. Did I hear her correctly? Equate them with Saudi Arabia and Pakistan in terms of danger to the West." And that's from Ruth in Otis, Massachusetts. I heard that one, too.
No, I did not equate them in terms of danger to the U.S. I equated them in our foreign policy towards both those countries has put us in trouble with large parts of the rest of the world. Israel, it's as many people have said to me in Tunisia, we're not extremists. They said, I hate Israel. It is a hated country. Their policies in Gaza this past year towards the Palestinians in general is widely regarded as warlike and supported by the United States. We may have good reasons to support that policy, but doing so has cost us the friendship of many, many Arab countries and their allies. It's just a fact of life.
We have time for probably one more question. Yes, over here. The president's decision not to attend the march in Paris. We have been all over this much of the week, but Rosemary, your thoughts?
Well, I think it was smart for him not to go. It was a high security risk. We're seeing that today in Belgium. So, yeah, it was smart. But why it stopped there, I can't figure out. You had Eric Holder was in Paris. Just go to the march, Eric. You know, walk down the street. What was the problem? I think they dropped the ball.
And they've said that they dropped the ball. And by the way, isn't this why vice presidents are created?
Exactly. I mean,
why isn't Joe Biden there?
Yeah.
What else is he?
He hasn't got anything to do.
Yeah. I mean, did Jill say, "Oh no, honey, I don't really want to go to Paris"?
We currently don't care about his security.
Je n'aime pas Paris.
He's a potential sacrifice.
What the hell? Send Joe Biden.
Of course, John Kerry is there today as we speak.
A week late.
And they're apologizing again for this. The White House has once again apologized for not being there.
Yes, Kerry actually apologized twice.
But excellent coverage on who was there. And these were people like Netanyahu who had been specifically asked not to come because of many of the reasons I've just been talking about. And then a day later, he's asking for an apology for a cartoon. Come on. And the New York Times went through each one of the leaders, and they all have abhorrent records on freedom of speech.
Well, yes,
we're out of time.
Don't single out Netanyahu. There were a lot of people out there who you would not want to be drinking with.
See, this is why we're going to get back together on Monday and argue and do all this great stuff again on the roundtable panel. A big hand to Rick Smith, Rosemary Romeo, and Alan Shartok. I'm Joe Donahue. Thank you all very much for being here. Stay tuned for the rest of the roundtable, and we'll be back after this.